coming up this week on the Course of Life podcast, we had a drama-filled Men's Olympic Golf Week with Americans in contention, some controversy over the medals, a playoff for bronze, and a whole lot more. Plus, we're talking about the women's tournament currently going on this week as you're listening to us and everything that we're tuned into outside of sports, from the return of a favorite TV show to the return of live music and much more. Plus, this week's guest is Jared Hack. Yes, his last name is Hack, but trust me, he's no hack on the golf course. This guy just posted some amazing rounds that went viral last week. We talked to him. Plus, we always end with food, and all of it is brought to you by our friends at FlightScope. They're the makers of the Mevo and the Mevo Plus. Mike, if you go down any range in any professional tournament, you see that big random square box behind all these guys hitting balls. A lot of people wonder what that is, and that's a device just like the FlightScope Mevo Plus that gives them all the data, the science, the information that these players need to know exactly how far they're hitting it, how well they're hitting it, and how correctly they're hitting the golf ball. You can have all that too. The Mevo is a tiny little pocket-sized device, and we can get you 10% off with promo code COL10 at FlightScope.com. So check out the Mevo if you're interested in 16 data points that tell you how far you're hitting the ball, club speed, and a whole lot more. Check out FlightScope and the Mevo, and promo code COL10 for 10% off of your Mevo today.
Interwebs, and welcome to Course of Life, part of the Morning Read Podcast Network. We are proud to be presented by our friends at Desert Fox Golf and Tosi Snacks. I'm Michael, he's Alex. And Alex, it is officially Olympic season as we are in full swing from everything going on over in Tokyo.
Oh, yeah.
COVID be damned, it wrecked its havoc on the golf field, but that didn't matter. There still were seven guys in a playoff for the bronze medal. This is the year of the playoff.
Yeah, the drama was probably tenfold of what we saw in 2016 in Rio. No shots at that event, but I felt like no matter when you ended up watching this, whether it was staying up in the middle of the night or the next morning on DVR like myself, or watching the highlights on your phone, it was clear that regardless of the field and who ended up being there, the guys who were in the hunt were gunning for the medals, Mike. They were putting it all on the line to try and get into that top three, and the drama was definitely at the max for this tournament.
Yeah, this was a pretty loaded field, as you would expect for the Olympics. And it just, the names at the top of the leaderboard, except for one, which we'll get to in a moment, there really was no surprise as to who was playing at the top of their game. The Americans took home the gold, of course, was Xander Schauffele.
Yeah.
It's nice to know the gold's coming back to here. We're not really back to here. It's coming here.
No, it is. Yeah. It's an impressive win for Schauffele. And you know, the thing with him is, like, we love to pick him in tournaments and whatnot. And he's got a lot of second and third place finishes. He hasn't really broken through on the major championship scale. I'm sure this felt like a major moment for him because that Olympic gold medal winning putt and the scrambling he did on the final holes when he was really encountering a lot of trouble, and it was very easily chokeable that tournament at a couple moments. He made unbelievable par and bogey saves when he needed to, and especially at that 72nd hole, stuffing that wedge after the errant tee shot to about 4 feet and hitting that little tickler down the hill to win the gold. That was some gutsy stuff from Xander.
It was indeed. So he got the gold draped around his neck. The silver happened to go to South Africa. Oh, I'm sorry, Slovakian Rory Sabatini.
Yes, that's what happened. You did not stutter.
No.
Rory Sabatini lives in the U.S., was born in South Africa, played dozens of world competitions for Team South Africa.
Yep.
Okay. Got married to a woman of Slovakian residency, took up Slovakian residency, and entered the golf Olympics as a Slovakian. And lo and behold, he wins the freaking silver medal with a 61. Mike, I saw the tweet that was drove me wild, and you'll appreciate this. You know how we talk about how the British Open is like great coffee golf, and like the West Coast swing is like, you know, you could have a drink at the end of the night with golf. Watching Rory Sabatini win a silver medal for Slovakia in the middle of the night was like psychedelic drug golf. I don't know what I was on. Someone must have drugged me for this to happen, but that was one of the more odd headlines you could have possibly drawn up. Did you even have any idea he was in this field? I must have glazed over his name a week or two ago when we were looking at it.
If I did see his name in there, I completely wrote him off because it's Rory Sabatini. I mean, when was the last time he even contended for a tournament? Isn't he on the senior circuit now or something? I don't even know.
Shots fired there. He's, I think, 45 or 46. Hasn't won in over a decade, so you're right about that. Been a long time. But yeah, just kind of showed up on the Olympic leaderboard as a Slovakian. I was like, wait, I could have sworn, you know, I'm getting old and my memory loses me sometimes, but I could have sworn Rory Sabatini was from a different country. You're right about that. But lo and behold, yes, he became a Slovakian resident. No matter what level of questionability or sketchiness that draws to you as the golf fan, an interesting silver medalist, but he hit all sorts of putts down the stretch to get it done.
So here's the question. Is Slovakia part of Europe? Could Rory Sabatini be on Team Europe for the Ryder Cup?
Yes, I love that idea. Oh, you're looking for a Rory pairing, aren't you, in the Ryder Cup as well, too?
I'm looking to see if we can get Rory Sabatini versus Xander Schauffele in the Ryder Cup and get a little gold-silver matchup going on.
I like that idea. So, yeah, Rory Sabatini, if you're so keen on getting in the Olympics for Slovakia, then you should be qualifying for the Ryder Cup in a couple of months. I think that's your next goal, right?
I think I'm all for it. I'm all for it. So it was a wild and crazy weekend for the men in the Olympics golf. And that third place, that bronze ended up going to CT Pan in that seven man playoff after four holes. Just crazy. Just crazy. Our guy, Sebastian Munoz, was in the running for it couldn't do it.
Yeah, he came up just short. He had a little chip shot over the back of the green on like the third playoff hole. It just scooted by. Oh, so close. And so many guys had an opportunity. Rory had about a 15-foot putt on the 72nd hole, which we later find out was for the bronze medal. You know, Sebastian Munoz had a 20-footer. Paul Casey had a 30-footer to get to 16-er. Mito Pereira from the Korn Ferry Tour, who got that Battlefield promotion, mm-hmm. he had a 360 lip out in the playoff to eliminate his contention for the bronze medal. So very drama-filled, but you're right. In the end, CT Pan was the last one standing. Morikawa almost hold the wedge. As much drama as you can ask for third place. And that was the most important third place we'd ever seen in the history of golf, basically. But shout out to CT Pan for getting that done.
So congrats to all the men. The attention now turns to the women who will be playing next.
Yeah, they're getting going as you're hearing this right now. They started a day earlier just to kind of cram in the 2-week window of the Olympics. So it's going to be a Friday night, Saturday finish for us in the U.S. Saturday finish there. And obviously, you know, here in the U.S., we just got an American gold in golf for Team U.S., which is great. Mm-hmm. Now I'm looking at the women and I've been teasing this headline and you and I have been talking about this for the months, the quarter tour. Could the quarter tour come to fruition and can we get both sisters on the podium by the end of the week? That's what I'm looking for.
It's certainly a possibility. And the other person I'd be looking at is Lexi, who got a hole in one during one of her practice rounds out there. So
that's good luck. That's
good luck, too. So.
Yeah. And then Danielle Kang rounds out the group. She's a fiery competitor as well, so it'd be interesting to see her get something done. So, again, that's the American team. In B Park, remember, defends from 2016. Don't forget that. She's always a threat to win any time at a venue like this. It's going to be a great field. I'll be watching the South Koreans. Again, our South Koreans, Sung Jae-im and Siwoo Kim, they fell short. So no military exemption for them. But looking forward to seeing the rest of the action from the women later this week.
You know who I'd be really worried about, though, if I had to play against them in the Olympic field, if they were in the field, and that would be the new U.S. Women's Senior Open champion, Annika Sorenstam.
Oh, yes, that's right. She had a pretty commanding win this past weekend for anyone who didn't catch that.
Wire, yeah.
I didn't even realize this was in Connecticut, too. I had no idea where the tournament was. It's the U.S. Women's Senior Open, which they just got going in the last few years. And I love this because as a fan of golf, I recognize all these old school LPGA names that are now over the age of 50 and competing on the senior circuit. So it's really cool. They're extending that into major championship form. And we profiled that Annika had the comeback at the LPGA and just casually made the cut in her first pro tournament in 13 years. Mm-hmm. To get her kind of prepped for this, Mike, I don't even think she really needed that prep because she absolutely rolled over this field.
I mean, I know you think that Tom Brady is like the best of the best, but he needs to sit down because class was in session, as Annika just really did put on a clinic all week. 8-stroke victory, wire to wire, just kept doing better and better as the week went on. I mean, this is just kind of insulting to the rest of the field, just how good she is.
Oh, yeah. And she brought the husband and the kids were there walking the fairway with her as she's dominating.
The husband was on the bag. Yeah.
Shout out to Mike, who was on the bag for a long time for her as well, too. So family affair. She got a little emotional. But yeah, the undeniable GOAT, Annika, getting it done again. And something is coming next now. We've gotten these Annika headlines every few months now. There's something else. I feel something else coming. I don't know if it's I'm coming back, but I have a feeling she might work herself back into maybe a handful of LPGA events a year, possibly in the next year or two. We'll look forward to seeing that.
Yeah, you know, and what's really interesting is that this win means that she gets an exemption into the 2022 U.S. Women's Open.
Oh, yes. She's definitely playing that.
She's playing that. Yep. So look out, everyone. The Corda Tour may be side railed next year when Annika comes back to the PGA Tour or the LPGA Tour. So
love that.
It's going to be great. What else is going to get side railed is your game this week when you finally make your trip to the first tee, Austin.
Yes, that's right. Oh, speaking of the Corda Tour, they got to watch their back because I just saw a little inside the biz here. You saw the email communication with our friends at the first tee, Austin. Mm. I'm getting paired up with some legit golfers for my visit this week. So I need to get my game in shape in the next couple of days before I head there. I'm playing with a few different junior golfers that help with the program and the camps there. So we're going to hit some shots, have some fun. I'm going to play some foot golf, check out the kids at the camp, and maybe get an interview or two as well from our friends at the first tee. But I'm looking forward to seeing the game. I hear a couple of these girls played on college golf programs, Mike. I think I could be in serious trouble. I might have to mix the teams up in our match because this could be a severe beatdown if I challenge any one of them.
Well, what's your handicap? You guys are playing with handicaps, right?
Yeah, I might need some strokes from them, honestly. Yeah. I'm sure these guys know the nine holes like the back of their hand. I've played it once or twice, but looking forward to heading back out to the first tee, Austin's campus. We love highlighting the nine core values whenever we can. We saw a whole bunch of perseverance from these Olympians that had to deal with a lot the last few weeks, just getting there and getting there safely and competing in the tournament, both on the men's and women's front. So we'll be highlighting the nine core values as we always do. And I'm looking forward to getting out there and hitting some shots with the kids.
Yeah? I'm looking forward to hearing about the entire adventure. It's going to be great.
Definitely. Yeah.
Now, though, let's turn our attention to where the men are playing next. Of course, the women are playing during the week right now at Tokyo. The men turn back stateside for two tournaments because we have a WGC FedEx St. Jude, as usual, in Memphis, loaded field, and then everyone else plays at the Barracuda.
Yeah, this is a busy week for me. I was thinking about this because this is about the time week I start to think, well, who am I going to pick? My picks are weekly on Twitter. I'm at Course of Life 1. You're at MWRINC. I got a lot of options here. On top of my picks that you already see for the Women's Olympics, I'm looking at both these tournaments. You remember last year is when I had my famous double win day. I picked the winner at Memphis and Richie Wierenski at the Barracuda and had two wins for my Twitter picks on one day. So we'll see if I can repeat that rare feat. This is usually a bomber's course. It plays long and tough and windy as well. It doesn't take a whole lot under par to win in Memphis. So I don't know. I'm always looking in the Brooks DJ direction at a venue like this. But my full card will be on Twitter Wednesday evening to see who gets it done this week.
That's right. I think you're right on all fronts about who could win this. And Stuart Sink.
Oh, good. That's good to know he's in the field. Hey, yep. And never forget, Stuart Sink is sneaky long now. He hits 300 yards.
True.
Love
he's
it.
Good. He's very good. Let's turn our attention tuned in where we share what we're tuning into outside of the world of sports, or really this week for you outside of the world of golf, because there's just so much sports going on with the Olympics that we kind of have to pay attention to it.
Yeah. And my Olympic thing is like, I couldn't even give you too many headlines because the way I watch the Olympics is very ADHD. Mm. I flip for about 5 or 10 minutes and then I get frustrated or bored with the sport and I flip to a different Olympic channel and I watch for about 5 or 10 minutes. So I'm seeing everything in blips. but the highlight I sent to you, my friend, on Twitter, which is the horse dressage competition.
Yes.
And Team USA had the most unbelievable routine with fierce, heart-throbbing EDM music behind a dancing horse. And people are just so fascinated by this dancing horse on the internet. It's amazing and awesome that this is an Olympic event. And I want the world to see how amazing this is.
I mean, dressage is just kind of, it exudes snootiness to me.
It does, yes.
And this music choice really helped bring it back down to earth. It really did a great job with that. So I appreciate that. I will say, though, I found out, did you know that the horses, they get flown into the Olympics and they actually have to have their own passport and everything? It's kind of crazy.
Wow, their own passport. Yeah. I would have not guessed that.
Huh. Yeah.
Interesting. So where do you go for a horse passport? That's the real question.
You go to the horse passport office.
Yeah. Down the main street there. Yeah, of course.
Equestrian travel lodge. And
that's right. The ETL, of course. How could I forget?
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I'll look into that if I do need to fly a horse over for an Olympic competition. But nonetheless, I'll just keep watching the dressage in the meantime.
There you go. I don't have cable, and the streaming to figure out the Olympics is just a pain in the butt. So I really haven't been watching any of it. Just watching through tweets and everything. So this week has actually been we've been watching stuff on Apple TV. I never thought I'd be watching like four different shows now on Apple TV. It feels like. So this week we watched the brand new Schmigadoon.
Excuse me?
Schmigadoon. And that's with an exclamation point at the end of it. Schmigadoon. It's about a couple that get caught in a musical and they need to find true love.
They're caught in it, literally.
Yeah. Caught in it.
So that's an intriguing
And then also started Ted Lasso season two, because Ted Lasso is life. So
Yes, the sports fan feel good show on Apple TV. Can't go wrong there. I did see season two is back as well, too. So a return to that great show. And my return I had this past week was a return to live music. That was very exciting for me. It has been close to a year and a half since I've seen a legit concert. Was in Houston this past weekend. Got to see a few rock bands of our past: Green Day, Fall Out Boy, Weezer. Mike, the lead singer for Weezer, it now has gray hair below his shoulders, and they're all in their 50s. That means we're starting to get pretty old out here, I think.
I mean, I feel old all the time now, so.
Yeah, but it was good to hear the hits from the 90s and 2000s again, and have live music back, the crowd singing to you, the cell phone lights on as Wake Me Up When September Ends blares through the stadium. It was great to be back in the concert scene.
I hope you're wearing a mask because, you know, Delta variant.
Oh, yeah, the good old Delta. Yeah, how is that?
It's going to be a fun rest of the summer and fall. But for now, though, let's turn our attention to this week's guest. As everyone knows, we're big fans of the guys who can hit under 60 and around, goes viral, takes over the internet. And you had a chance to talk to a guy who's done this, but whose name is Hack.
Yes, that's right. Yes, his name is Hack. Jared Hack. He gets into his name and the weird things he hears because of his name and the fact that he's a professional golfer. It's quite ironic. What isn't ironic is how skilled this guy is. He had a couple of viral rounds this past week, and he walks us through both of them. Really cool conversation with a guy who you may not know in the world of golf, but he could quite literally be the hottest golfer on the planet right now. So stay tuned.
Well, looking forward to that. We'll get to that conversation in just a moment. But first, as always, this interview is brought to you by Desert Fox Golf, our friends of the show and the makers of the Phone Caddy. The Phone Caddy lets you strap your phone right onto the side of your golf cart so it's easy to view and use all day long. No more fumbling around in the dark spaces of your cart, dropping your phone in the seat, or even worse, onto the grass as you drive away. The Phone Caddy keeps you locked in safely so you can stay locked into your round. It'll be the talk of your foursome and a great gift for any golfer in your life. And for all of you listening, you can save 10% off your purchase of a phone caddy with the promo code COURSEOFLIFE. It comes in a range of colors, and you can even show your support with their patriotic line. So head on over to desertfoxgolf.com to get your phone caddy, and don't forget to use the promo code COURSEOFLIFE to save 10%. Again, that's promo code COURSEOFLIFE at desertfoxgolf.com.
Next up on the tee, we've got a tour pro based out of Las Vegas, Nevada, that just casually shot a 57 and a 60 in the past week. We're continuing our psycho scorecard series here on the Course of Life. And we've got Jared Hack joining us now. Jared, how's it going today?
Great, Alex. How are you, man?
Great, man. It's awesome to have you on. And obviously, as soon as I heard about this round, we've got a little bit of specialty now. If you break 60 and you kind of go viral in the world of golf, we got to have you on to tell the story. So I want to hear about the story about the 57 and the 60. But obviously, we got to get your name out of the way real quick. You're a golfer with the last name Hack. I'm sure you run through and run into a bunch of really common dumb jokes that you get about your name and your golf game. What do you most commonly hear people say when they hear your name?
Oh, man, I guess the best one is always calling to get a practice round tee time for a mini tour event. You know, they think I'm kind of pulling their leg when I tell them my last name. No, really, what's your last name? And I'm like, no, that's it. Oh, man, that's great.
Yeah, you know, Jared Hack. Very, very believable prank phone call name right there.
Right, exactly.
Nice, I appreciate that. And one other funny moment that happened to you and a couple of other golfers, which created a really funny viral moment in the world of golf a few years back, was, I believe, on the Korn Ferry Tour event you were playing, the infamous Hack Shank Yip group. So for those who don't understand what happened there, explain how that came to be.
Yeah, so they wouldn't do it. Thursday, Friday are made pairing, fixed pairings, and they wouldn't do it at all during the regular season, Thursday, Friday. So Ryan made a putt, I guess about a 20-footer on Saturday afternoon in Knoxville to make the pairing happen. We all perfectly aligned on the leaderboard to where we went out in that group. We all played well, too. I think Adam finished fourth, Ryan finished seventh, and I finished 11th. So it was actually really cool, you know, timing that we all played well, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's the complete irony of that whole thing. Hack, shank, and yip, probably one of the last words you want to hear on the golf course. But not only did you guys all play well, you guys were all a bunch under par heading into that round too. So it was funny to see the names listed out on the sign there. A funny moment there from this week's guest, Jared Hack, here on the Course of Life. So let's talk about the round that we want to get to, the one that's going viral right now, the 57 at Las Vegas Country Club. So you're based out of Vegas. I guess kind of heading into the day, just pre-round, what's kind of the status of your game? You have a good practice session recently, or how did things feel going into that day?
So I just signed up for Q school a few days prior. So it kind of, you know, set in that, like, all right, I put Q school on a credit card. I did get a good practice session in that day. And, I don't know. It's just kind of motivating. Like, okay, for, you know, the next few months, we really got to dig deeper than I have. And Tuesdays and Thursdays, we play skins at Las Vegas Golf Club. So that round of golf I had no idea that was coming, obviously. I just went out to play Thursday skins and jokingly on the range, you know, you play with the same group of 15, 20 guys and a couple of the guys who are probably scratched to like two handicaps. You know, we always have a game. I give them two and a half aside. And
okay.
I looked at both of them today and I was like, you know what? I'm going to play you two best ball versus my ball. I said, I just signed up for Q school. I'm going to come at you today. And they're like, perfect. Let's go. And yeah, just, you know, birdie one, eagle two, birdie three, birdie four. It's just the ribbing kind of started, making the putt on three. I made like a 15 foot right to left here, and they just looked at me and they're like, that's how it's going to be today, huh? And I was like, you know, obviously joking, but I was like, I told you I'm coming for you.
That's great. So the start was hot indeed. And for those of us who are pulling up the scorecard right now of this amazing 57, we were looking at a front nine 26. Now, we've seen a lot of these scorecards and profiled them on the podcast. Now, the part I'm most impressed with is both of the eagles on the par fives on the front nine. I've seen some of these sub 60 rounds where players settle for birdies and even pars on par fives. So I'm curious, what were the key to the two eagles on the front nine specifically?
So I will say this, the golf course is very, very short, you know, 6,400 yards. Number two is about 490, I believe, something like that. You do have to hit a good drive though. You got the road up the left and you got trees up the right. So I hit a nice drive and I had, I want to say 194 or something back right pin. And it was just a perfect full seven iron. And I hit a very good shot in there to about 8 feet or so. And rolled the putt right in, and then Number nine's same thing. Number nine's a little bit more open tee shot. That's one of the tee balls you can kind of just unleash on. But same thing. I think I had 191 in, which was nice. It was almost the same number, almost the same wind direction. And I hit a good full seven iron about 15, 18 feet behind the hole. And one of the guys in my group had holed the bunker shot from the front edge, or, you know, from the front of the green.
Oh, wow.
For three. And I looked at him, I said, "You want me to miss this to, you know, to do a little parking lot split for your skin?" And he laughs. Yeah, I was joking as well. I knew that 18 footer was going in. That would have been great. But yeah, I rolled it right in as well.
Nice. So there we sat. I'm curious, how much assessment did you do, maybe making the turn, you know, looking at the scorecard at all? Or was there a moment maybe halfway through the round where you had an idea of how low this is, you know, knowing that what you are and the pros who are there, this is a shorter course. I'm sure there's been a lot of low rounds there. But at what point did you start to kind of pinch yourself and think like, oh, this could be dangerously low today?
I think when that eagle putt went on nine, you know, I was 10 through nine, obviously I'd never shot that. Doesn't matter what course you're playing or what tees, you still have to make putts and you still have to hit shots. And I was like, okay, well, let's restart. Cause I'd been, honestly, that was my fourth sub 39 holes of golf in the last month on several different golf courses. And I kind of got ahead of myself in all of those and, you know, would shoot 62, 63, kind of just shoot, you know, 1-2 under on the back. And so that was one of the things I've been working on with my sports psychologist, is just staying present. And you know, you're allowed to get ahead of yourself, but when it's time to hit the golf shot, it's time to hit the golf shot and focus on what you're doing. And, you know, number 10, the guys I played with went into the pro shop and obviously let them know at the turn. So they kind of had an idea of what was going on. And 10's by far the toughest tee shot on the course for me. There's OB left. You can hit it miles right, but you hit it in the trees. And hey, it's time to restart the round. And I hit a great drive right down the middle and hit a wedge in there to about 20 feet and made it.
Yeah, that's the difference between you and us, the amateurs listening out there, is that restart. You know, when us amateurs are playing our best round, we let it get to our head, we count the strokes, we see how many holes are left, and then we start bailing out and making mistakes left and right. And you did the opposite. You kept it rolling through the back nine. So let's talk about, as we're building towards the finish now, was there a moment when nerves hit at all, or was there a swing you were over where you could kind of officially feel any sort of pressure at the moment, knowing how low the round could be, or was it all just one shot at a time? And adding them up at the end?
No, definitely. I mean, like I said, even on 10 tee shot, I kind of started getting a little ahead of myself, but, you know, get the reset, get a little, I was definitely, you know, the arousal level was high, you know, nervous in a good way is what I would say.
Yeah.
And number 13, par five, I hit a good drive there and I only had nine iron in, and I had birdied 11 as well. So I was 12 under, on 13 with the nine iron in, and the other par five on the back is very reachable as well. So I was like, you know, if I can just birdie both of these, I shoot 59. And I was like, you know what, stop getting ahead of yourself. I hit a terrible nine iron. I came up and out of it. I hit it to about 45 feet and it went right in the middle. I made the 45 just perfect speed right in the middle. And that kind of calmed me down. That was when I was like, all right, I think I'm going to break 60 today. Like, this is meant to be.
Nice. Wow. What a bomb indeed. That's crazy. The 45 footer indeed, to get things really going. Now let's talk about the nervy moment, because I've seen this in all of these crazy rounds we've documented. My buddy Xander Hughes shot 55, but he had a skull chip shot that went 15 feet past the hole and he made the putt. Ryan Brooks in England shot 56, but he had some tree trouble on a par five and needed to get up and down with a wedge. Talk to me about 16 and 17 going par bogey. I'm guessing the rest of the group must have been mortified when they see that, but what happened there on those two holes?
So 16, the greens are very soft out there, so back pins are tough to get to. You know, you got to really control a wedge. So typically from, you know, 95 yards, it'd be just a nice stock lob wedge on you know, firm greens for me. And I had 94 yards to this back pin, and I tried to chip a little 54 degree to take the spin off of it, and I flew the green. So now I'm you know, I'm not nervous about making bogey, but I'm like, dang, that was kind of uncalled for. Like, I know better.
Yeah, 94 yards too. Yeah.
Yeah, should have just chipped it to 20 feet at that point. The wedge shot, obviously, but luckily the greens are soft. You know, I had probably a 25 foot chip, a little short sighted, but greens are soft, and chipping's the best part of my game. So I was actually kind of over it trying to make it, and I hit a great chip to about a foot. Tapped it in, and then 17 is probably one, from a scoring standpoint, probably the hardest hole in the course to birdie. It's a 215 yard par three, depending on the day. It was 205 that day, and it was kind of downwind off the right, and I hit a good full 7 iron. I was kind of amped at that point, so I wouldn't normally hit it from that distance, but I actually hit it to 5.5 feet behind the hole. It was a downhill left edge putt. Greens aren't very fast, but I've been kind of missing my left to righters a little low over the last few months. And I think I made a good routine and everything. I think I just gave it a little extra, pulled it, caught the high lip and lipped out to about 2.5 feet. Marked it, took my time, and I mean, just complete brain fart. I completely missed the hole from 2.5 feet after all the putts I had made all day long.
Wow. The ultimate irony moment right there to snap you back into reality on the 17th
yeah,
hole.
I know. So
play us down 18 now, kind of knowing what you knew, you understood that bogey, but there's still one last opportunity to get maybe one more red on the scorecard. What happened on 18 to obviously to cap off the wonderful round?
Yeah, to be honest, I didn't realize that the previous course record was 58 until I was on the green. I knew it
Jeez.
Was, but I didn't
Okay. Yeah, I would have just guessed it was maybe, 61, 62 or something like that. I wouldn't have known it'd be in the 50s. Wow.
It was a long time ago. I'm not sure what the situation was when the guy shot it, but it obviously every week, you know, we all try to, you know, tie the course record or shoot in the 50s out there, but yeah, I hit a good drive. I hit a very solid drive. I had 81 yards in, and I hit just a perfect little clipped lob wedge to about 2.5-3 feet. Oh. And after the putt I had missed on the prior hole, I was definitely a little nervous on this putt, but I had already broke 60, which was obviously like the main goal after I had gotten so deep in the round. So I hit a good putt. It went in, and yeah, I didn't really realize like how cool it was until later that night. It was just, I did such a good job of really staying in the moment, I think, that I didn't realize how many putts I went back through, and I'm like, wow, I made a lot of putts.
Yeah, bombs too, as you profiled there. Jared Hack here, yeah. Mr. 57, crazy round indeed. Before we get to that 60 as well, I'm curious, what was the like walk into the pro shop in the 19th hole like? That's always an interesting reaction when that score starts hitting around everyone at the club. What did everyone think of the moment when you finally finished?
Yeah, I mean, I was smiling, obviously. The guys in my group went in first. They ran in to tell the other guys in the skins because we're the last group, and you walk in and everybody, you know, is obviously very happy for me. Guys are kind of being smart asses. They're like, well, I guess we'll go home. There aren't any skins today, you know, kind of thing. So it was fun.
Nice.
Everybody
love that.
It was really cool.
Awesome. And then, so I wanted to mention this because you followed this up just yesterday before we're hopping on. I wanted to talk 57, and then another round happened just recently. I know you're getting ready for the Arizona Open, I believe, and you got to play out at Quintero in Arizona. So just a few days after this 57, you followed up with a 60 at a different course. Now I'm curious, as this round was happening, the most recent one, did you have the 57 in mind a lot? How was that playing there in your most recent effort when you shot 60?
I mean, okay, so one, we didn't, a buddy of mine from Vegas, a fellow professional golfer traveling with me, we didn't even know we were going to be playing. We were just trying to find a place to practice along the way. And I had always heard Quintero's good golf course. I guess it's the number one public course in Arizona.
Yeah.
So we drove out and just walked in the shop and asked if we could maybe hit some balls in practice. And the head pro was a little hesitant, but super, super nice. He's like, you know what? We got an open time after 2:00. Why don't you guys go grab some lunch, hit some balls, and you can go play, and maybe our assistant pro will even join you. So it's super nice of him to let us go out and do that. And as we're driving to the first tee, the assistant came out and he's like, I can't play. I got to go hang out with my wife for a little bit. But we got you paired with two ladies playing the Arizona State Women's Stroke Play Championship out there next week.
Oh, cool.
But my buddy just kind of jokingly, he's like, so what's the course record? And the assistant goes, it's 63 by Pat Perez. And so the starter's got to give his spiel and whatnot. It's definitely memorized. It was pretty funny. But my buddy's like, well, I'm glad we got paired with these other two girls so they can attest the course record we're about to shoot. And I'm just, you know, obviously.
Oh, man, he's really laying it on thick for you there.
I know. And I birdied one. I hit it to about 10 feet for eagle on two. Now, mind you, this is actually like a very real golf course, 7,200 yard.
Okay.
Pretty tight. Like, birdied three. I made about a 30 footer. I hit it to about 4 feet on four. I birdie five. And I'm just like, at this point, I started posting a little bit on my Instagram again. Like, here we go again. I kind of jokingly, I fizzled out a little bit. I turned at six under. I eagled 10 to get to 8 through 10. Left a putt short on 11, I believe. Birdied 12. Anyway, it kind of stalled out a little bit. I parred a par five, which it was a very tight tee shot. I hit it in a fairway bunker.
Yeah.
And then missed about a 15 footer that was a pretty easy putt. I just burned the edge, so I had to birdie the last three for 59.
You got a couple, right? I think you had to putt at 18 for it, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. So 16 was a 16 is a good par three. All the par threes out there are incredible, by the way. The course is beautiful. Huge elevation changes. I think it was 216 to the hole, and I hit 7 iron. I mean, it was down 25 yards. Hit 7 iron to about 25 feet, made it. 17 was kind of a quirky hole. We just hit hybrids off the tee. I had sand wedge in. I hit that. It was a front pin downwind, and I hit that one about 20 feet behind the hole. And that went in the middle, and I was like, wow, this is just, again, kind of felt meant to be. And number 18, I hit a good drive. It was into the wind, kind of a tight tee shot for me. And I had a 145 in, kind of a chip 9 iron. And I tugged it a little bit to about 35 feet, and it was just kind of down left to right. I hit a good putt. I missed it high. I ran it by about 2.5 feet. Wish I could have hit a better iron shot. Wish I could have birdied the par five, but still a really fun round of golf and really, really good preparation for these tournaments and all the stuff I've been working on with my sports psychologist.
Yeah, definitely paying off for sure. I'm curious. So were those two consecutive rounds right there? Or did you get any other rounds in between? Because those might be the two lowest consecutive rounds in the history of the game, if we're counting.
I played Skins game on Friday at Boulder Creek, or sorry, at Boulder Boulder Golf Club. So it's another Muni Skins game. And it was definitely disappointing. I shot 67.
Yeah, a very disappointing one, yeah, after those rounds.
But the weather was perfect and everything. So it was just one of those rounds where it was hard to focus.
Yeah.
It was hard to focus that day. I'd taken a couple of phone calls on the golf course to do some other interviews and stuff. So it was hard to focus that day, but so much fun just chatting with everybody and seeing how much support I've gotten.
It's really amazing. 57 and 60, both in the same week. It's Jared Hack. He's J-Hack Golf on Instagram. Let's get to a few final questions because I know that we've got a mutual contact as well. You spend a lot of time at Shadow Creek as well. And a past guest on the show, Taylor Montgomery, is there a lot too. His dad helps run the place. Tell me about your time at that very exclusive and beautiful venue, Shadow Creek, and any stories you have playing on the course with Taylor and Skins games there.
Yeah, man. No, I'm very fortunate. Everybody out there is so cool. It's such a cool operation out there and incredible that we get to play and practice out there. So I actually moved out there when I lost my Korn Ferry status in 2018. I had kind of given up golf. I played so poorly out there, and Shadow was an opportunity for me to be able to pay my bills and kind of play and practice. And man, when I first moved out there, I could hardly break 90 on that golf course. I was hitting it so bad, and you know, so everybody was kind of ribbing me and stuff, and getting to play with Taylor, and we play in 5, 6, 7 sometimes out there, so everybody's chirping at each other and having fun. And Taylor's master trash talker, but he can back it up, man. One of the most incredible putters I've ever seen. And just getting to go out there and play those games and be in those situations with those guys has helped me tremendously. But yeah, Taylor, if he has a putt on 9 or 18 to flip a press or something, you can bet your life on it.
Yes.
I mean, it doesn't matter what length it is. And he'll let you know about it too. It's awesome.
For sure. Yeah. And people, I love profiling that he won a freaking putting competition on the Vegas Strip to help fund his career back in the day. The guy's got a lot of cool background in the game as well too. I know you yourself, you've got cool background and you've played a lot of different tournaments this summer right now for guys like you who don't quite have the Korn Ferry or PGA status they quite need. I know that like the state open circuit's big. I'm sure you've played a bunch of those. What's like maybe an unsung or favorite kind of state open or tournament stop you've had recently?
I honestly we always have a lot of fun playing the Parker Open. It's in Parker, Arizona, kind of on the river, near Lake Havasu and or Havasu City. And it's a quirky little canyon course. The people at the course all volunteer their time, run it very well. That's in late April, if anybody's listening. That's a fun tournament to go to. Man, everything this summer. I'm excited to play Arizona Open, playing Superstition Mountain this week. It's a beautiful golf course. I haven't qualified for the Utah Open yet. I've missed the last few years, but caddied for my roommate. The golf course for the Utah Open is tremendous. They run that event like a Korn Ferry Tour event.
Nice. Yeah, that's a beautiful part of the country too. Very unsung part of the country. Nice. Cool. And we love to wrap our interviews up with our guests, obviously talking about the 19th hole. I'm curious how much of a celebration there was after the 57. But regardless, I want to know, what's your go-to meal and drink of choice when you get into the clubhouse after a day on the course?
Ooh, that's a good one. I'm pretty simple. Vodka, soda, lemon. So Tito's and soda with lemon is definitely refreshing after a good round of golf. On Tuesday Skins, they at Vegas Golf Club, they used to have Taco Tuesdays out there. They'd have like good grilled chicken tacos, so I'd go for those.
Nice. That's a great choice, especially for myself being in Austin, Texas, the Tex-Mex capital of the world. I can appreciate a good taco on Taco Tuesday. Good answer indeed. Hey, Jared, thanks so much for hopping on again. It's Jared Hack. He's definitely not a hack. He could arguably be the hottest putter in the world right now as you're listening to this. Best of luck in the Arizona Open and all the future tournaments the rest of your schedule.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on, man. Have a great day.
And we're back. Great chat there with Jared Hack. I don't know which name I would rather have if I had to choose: Hack, Shank, or Yip. And they're just all bad choices.
Yes, they are. And it's amazing that they actually fortuitously got paired together a few years ago on the Korn Ferry Tour. I love that. Notice they were all 15 under par for the week when they got paired together. So at least they're playing well. But yeah, Hack is quite the name. I love how he thinks the golf course attendants think they're getting pranked when he calls in for practice tee time. That had me rolling on the floor laughing. I could not get over that. But nonetheless, Jared's red hot right now. He's playing the Arizona Open this week if you want to follow scoring online. And like he said, he just plunked down the money for Q School, Mike. And you know how that feels. Like when you make a big investment into something, like whether it's a car or a trip or a property or anything in your life, when you make that investment and you plunk down the several grand for Q School, it's like, all right, I got to get going right now. Like I can't waste these next few months. So we're going to watch him on the grind and follow his path to Q School and hopefully big things in store for Jared.
I can't wait to see him hack his way out of the tour.
Yes, that's going to be great. Pun it's got to be, intended. He's got to write on his bag, like, Jared ain't no hack. I think that should be his nickname or something like that. You know what I mean?
And he should embrace it, really, just all the way. Just go all the way. And you all should go all the way to make sure you follow us on the social medias. Alex is on Instagram at Course of Life Alex. I'm on there at MWRINC. Our official Instagram, COL Podcast.
Yes.
Catch everything we do there. We talk a lot on Twitter as well. I'm at MWRINC. You're at Course of Life 1. So Twitter's a great place to catch up with us.
Yes, and I'm going to put together a nice little YouTube video of my trip this Thursday, the first tee. So I'm going to clip together a bunch of conversations, get the golf swings, check out what's going on there, the facility. You're going to get to see me make a fool of myself out on the foot golf course too, because I have no clue what's in store for me there. I haven't kicked a soccer ball in 15 years, so that'll be coming to the YouTube page as well. So be sure to follow Course Life Podcast on YouTube as well.
Looking forward to it. The other thing I'm looking forward to is football season.
Yes, finally. This Thursday night as we speak, the Hall of Fame game, and then we get going with some meaningless preseason. But I got a QB battle, so I'm watching every single snap, training camp, practice, everything. My rookie, Mac Jones, is first out on the field every day, but Bill Belichick still claims Cam Newton's the quarterback, but he also says there's a decision to be made. So things are still up in the air through 1 week of practice in Foxborough. That's pretty much the QB update in my Foxborough competition to see you leave the team this year.
The other thing I want to know, though, is how do you feel about the Austin Bills?
Yes, what a headline that was.
I know.
Thank you for mentioning that. Yes, I think Austin, Texas got randomly mentioned as like a pawn in negotiations between the Bills and the city of Buffalo. And they were like, we'll you're not going to, taxpay money for this. We'll pick our hat up and go to, let me point somewhere on the map. There, we're going to go to Austin, Texas. We'll do it. And that's how we got in the news. So, oh my God, if that actually happened, would I have to become a Bills fan? Is that how that works?
Well, I'm pretty sure they would rename themselves. I don't know what, but I'm sure they'll rename themselves as something. The Austin Weirdos or something like that.
Well, you just created the name. Incidentally. That's awesome.
Trademark. Patent pending. Copyright.
Nice work. I'm in on the Austin Bills is the short answer to that. I'm in.
Yeah. Okay. All right. We'll see if it happens. Also, baseball season isn't over, unlike everything I've been saying for the last few weeks. The Yankees are surging. They're third in the AL East. The Red Sox are slumping, and the Tampa Bay Rays are the best team in the East.
They really are. That all happened really fast because I've been doing all the trash talk at this part of the podcast for the last few months now. I was pissed when I saw the Yankees got Anthony Rizzo from the Cubs. Yep. That really hit hard for me because the Red Sox were in on him, and they absolutely did not do what they needed to do at the deadline. So it's officially going to be tight all the way. Just like I was saying earlier in the spring, I was trying not to be too cocky. Mm-hmm. I let it get the best of me when I was at Fenway Park in June and I saw us murder the Yankees. But unfortunately, you guys have woken up from the dead like The Undertaker in those old WWE matches. Yep. So I think you might have one more breath here in the last
month. I think we do. Rizzo has opened it up. And what I think is great about the Yankees in general is that the Yankees to get Anthony Rizzo didn't give away any of their top 10 prospects. So
that's the move. That's how you get it done.
Future is bright.
Yeah, it is.
You know what else is bright? Hashtag always ending with food. I-N-G.
We love the Toasty Bites. That's a nice bright snack. I mean, again, it's my 9th, 10th tea snack. Yep. I do it every time I play golf now. My game's trending. That's all you need to know. But their top flavors are almond, peanut dark chocolate, cashew coconut, almond blueberry. Try the new almond dark chocolate sea salt. Oh, what a great snack. Promo code COL20 for 20% off or go to toasty.com/COL. You can check out Always End With Food podcast as well to our Instagram page. You'd see some amazing seafood that I posted last week. I went to Houston, got some Cajun food, and went to the famous Acme Oyster House. Mike, first off, I don't even know. Where do you stand on oysters anyway?
So oddly enough, I never had raw oysters until I 2 years ago here in Savannah. I grew up in New England and never had raw oysters until I came all the way down here.
I feel like honestly, what a lot of people do is they eat them just out of kind of safety for their own mind. Is you eat them like cooked or grilled or steamed first?
I don't think I've even
tried them raw once you get a little bit more comfortable.
Yeah, I don't think I've even ever had them grilled or steamed or maybe fried. Probably fried at one point. I don't know.
Let me tell you, Mike, you need to go ahead and get yourself some grilled oysters the next time you can. These were grilled with an herby garlicky butter and a wonderful blend of cheeses all right on top of the oyster. They were still sizzling right at the table. Again, you can go to Always End With Food Pod to check out that video I'm talking about. So tasty. Top one oyster I've ever had in my life right there. Acme Oyster House in Houston, Texas. That was my treat for the past week.
That sounds pretty good. Did you get to have any bread or sweets afterwards?
it's funny you mentioned that. And then the great segue and nice thought too. They give you these wonderful little pieces of they cut up nice like French baguette bread. And you get to sop up all like the juice in the oyster. And you can take a nice bite and mix it in with the oyster bite. So it's a nice little combo that they had going on there.
I like it. like it. We actually on Saturday, the wife and I spent a little bit of time out and about, and in our travels, we went to it's a nice little bookstore out here in Savannah, East Shavers Bookstore. If you're ever here, just go visit. And we picked up a cookbook called The Jewish Baker, The Modern Jewish Baker. And we made some hamantaschen.
Oh, that's a very Jewish sounding name right there. Well, say that one more time for the friends at home.
It's hamantaschen.
What is that exactly?
It's a triangle shaped cookie with a filling in the middle. So it's almost like a little bit of it's hard to explain the cookie itself. It's kind of mixed between a short crust and a sugar cookie. Something like that, and it's filled with like fruit or like a jam or something, maybe a nut or something like that going on in there too. What we made was a s'mores hamantaschen, so it was filled with Nutella, a marshmallow, and then dipped in chocolate with graham cracker crumbs.
Nice summery theme dessert there.
It was fantastic. And literally on my counter right now, cooling. As soon as we're done, I'm going to go try it. Is some everything bagel challah from the book as well. So.
Oh yes, and I heard this is what you hit the everything seasoning with, correct?
Yes. Yep. It's covered in it. It's already on my Instagram, and it's great. It's going to be great. Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be great. If it's not great, I'm going to say great things here on the podcast about it, and then you're going to go look at my Instagram. I'm not going to post anything because it wasn't great.
Perfect. Sounds like a plan. Yeah, that everything bagel seasoning. Mm. I think that might be like the up and coming condiment of 2021. It's a big year for everything bagel seasoning, right?
Really hot. It's been getting bigger and bigger over the last year or so, and I think it's at its tipping point now.
Love it. Awesome. Good stuff. That's Always In with Food. As always, thanks for hopping on with us and listening to The Course of Life. We'll be back again next week. Everyone have a good week.